This is an interview with Lila Savage for the Youngstown State University Oral History Project on the racial tensions during the 1960s in Farrell, Pennsylvania, by Ronald J. Rice at 913 Wallace Avenue, Farrell, Pennsylvania, on November 11th, 1980, at 8:10 p.m.
Okay.
Well, Ms. Savage, would you like to start out by telling us a little bit what your childhood was like and what you remember about growing up?
Born and raised until 11 years old, two last with Virginia, and I was the oldest of three children. I had one brother, Franklin, and Freddie, and Florence, Morgan. By me being born in the South, I came through the racial tensions of blacks one place and white one place. There was no we had radios, but there wasn't any television. We had electric lights. We heated by coal. And then finally we went to all electric heat, which still even to the day is most electric heat through the South. They haven't used gas, but most of it's possible electric. They have electric hot water. But I was not bitter. I wasn't bitter, although I attended an all-black school called the Catholic Training School, which lasted.
High school?
I went to high school. As well, we went to grade school. When I went to high school, which I never got to go because I moved here, would have been in Christiansburg, and you would bus. So the busing was very, common with us to be bused from one school to another, which would have been like about 200 to 300 miles away to the next school. School, but our grade school now is used for daycare. We have a legal service in there. We still stand in ice creek school, right next to the water with the playground. They taught us a lot of things, like as far as social things. They taught us that we had to succeed, we had to get ahead. Having all black teachers, they instilled in us that we should learn and remember what we and to try to succeed in life. We had music, which was common, drama, which, those were subjects that was given to us as part of our curriculum. It was fun. We would go and we attend the white schools, and they vice versa, we'd come to our schools, and we'd put on activities and things like that. We played together. We lived together. I didn't know until I moved up here that black stayed in one area and white was in another area. That was not our policy from where I was, black, white, wherever you had the money you wanted to live, you were allowed to live. Except we just didn't attend the school, we would attend church sometime together. But it was very nice.
What do you remember about your parents? What's...
My parents, they're cooking. My father was a cook all his life, and he was a very good cook. And I remember him always playing the piano. It's not having a lot of television and things like that. We're a very close family because we did a lot of talking together and laughing and playing together and things like that, which families and things don't do. So I always remember him like, sitting around the TV, around the piano, him playing and singing together. And my mother and father separated when I was at a very young age. So I had the time we could spend, and in Pulaski, your mother would have you for 6 months. Father would have you for 6 months. So that way, each parent was always responsible to you, and that was carried through until we left and came to Pennsylvania. So right now, I wasn't going back there and stay 6 months in school, for 6 months. But my mother and father was always a very close family. Even after they separated, I didn't know them to be always hard, and whatever was best for us is what the decision was made for us. And he would come up here, he would visit, he would stay at my mother's, and she married again, but that didn't make no difference, so it was pretty nice.
When did you, what year was it that you came to Pennsylvania?
In 47.
47.
When my baby sister was like 2 weeks old.
And you settled in?
Farrell, Pennsylvania at 109 Wallace Avenue in the project. project, and we've been on Wallsett Road except one. About 3 years, we lived on Dock a while. Moved to Wheaton until the flood came. And my mother, after the flood, we never stayed there anymore because she didn't like that water coming down. I'm on Wallace. I bought a home on Wallace. My mother lives at 937 Wallace, and my sister bought a home on Wallace. So we're all still on Wallace except my brother. He moved to Columbus, Ohio. He's a policeman. And then my other brother, he moved to Newcastle. And he was a foreman at the Malibu until they got killed. So. But all the girls, we all stayed on Wallace there. Never lived on any other street except when we moved out of the wood, about 7 dark.
And then you attended high school here for?
Mm-hmm. I attended Pargany School, and then from there I went to the junior high school, Farrell Junior High School, which was right here in Roma. Mm-hmm. And then from Roma I went to the Farrell Senior High School. And then after I married and for a while I decided, I was on welfare, and I decided to go to school. I attended Atwater School of Hospitality in Sharon. It was very hard because there wasn't any water, and when we did have water, we'd freeze up, and she was having a problem keeping the gas on, and we had to walk and sit in the cold. But all of us that went on an education, and then I went to Erie and took my test and got my license. The one thing to love.
Mm-hmm. Well, what do you remember most about high school?
High school? The kids. I think that we had one of the best relationship, black and white relationship. We didn't look at each other as that. We were more like a group of kids who was thrown in a melting pot, and we just wanted to learn and have fun. And even now, when we see one another, we still have that closeness, you know, and the kindness, and we participate in the sports and going to one another's house, eating and sleeping, and, you know.
Right, what did you graduate really nice. From high school?
55.
And then when you got out of high school, you went to the...
When I got out of high school, I stayed home with my mother for a while until I decided to start raising a family. And then from then, I lived right across the street here in Federal, and then I moved into projects and stayed in projects for a while. 5 years, then I got a move on French Street because it went up on my rent to $60, and I thought that was too much, mm-hmm. and I didn't want to pay the $60. I moved out, and I stayed there for about 7 months. Then I moved to
and you decided to get into the cosmetology.
I went to school of cosmetology when my son Leonard was about 2 years old. And I decided to go into cosmetology. I wanted to get some kind of education background for myself. I always wanted to go into the service, but my mother didn't really permit it. They thought only bad girls went to the service.
What were some of your chief interests at that time besides cosmetology? Do you have any hobbies in there?
No, at that time I mostly was just a homebody. I didn't do anything. I didn't go to school, and I'd come home and clean, wash, and I was bored. Work myself to death.
Okay, did you get a job in cosmetology?
No, I would do it a while at home. Maybe have 3 or 4 customers I come into. I didn't particularly like it if I got into it. I didn't like trying to make people like someone else when their facial, you know, wasn't, you know.
Nothing you could do about it.
Nothing I could do with that and things like that. The pay was good, you know, mm-hmm. but I always wanted to work around with people. I still do it on spare time and vacation, you know, make some extra money around Christmas time. So.
Well, through the 50s then, we were mostly concerned with your family.
Was at home, going to, I didn't get involved with anything in the community as much. I was community bound, but I mean, I didn't get like any organizations or anything like that until my son decided I went to school. So wherever my children went, that's where I would be. So when he started school, that's when I began to get involved with the PTA. And then as they grew up, then I got involved with Little League. You know, became the president of the Ethel School, president of John Hector School, president, you know, PTAs I'm speaking of, you know, did voluntary work, which started our first, what they called AIDS. We started that by volunteering in classrooms, and then they, you know, seek federal funds, and they were able to pay people to get AIDS. I didn't start working or anything. I got really involved until May I worked for 1 year in Head Start as a teacher's aide. And at that time, that's when Lila was in. She was the first child to go to daycare when they started Head Start in the daycare.
And this would have been in...
And,
when was she born, 19?
She's born in April. She's 20 years old now, so what would that mean?
1960.
Yeah, 1960, yeah. Right. And that's when they started the first daycare center here. And I worked for 1 year at John Hitcher School. But at that time, if you didn't have a child in Head Start, you weren't permitted to work in the program. So when she came out of program, that meant I had to give up my job. So I didn't go to work anymore until after Linnea went to first grade before I had to work anymore. I always believe that when your children are like 5 years old, things like the first 5 years are the most important time for a mother to be around. And I didn't go to the teacher for 5 years. Then after she, I didn't want to have more children after she got 5 years old, and that's when I got more involved in working. But I always did work with Head Start folks. Volunteer, I was their first president Head Start ever had, and I kept that position for 10 years, in which they gave me an honor, you know, for gifts and everything like that. I was the longest one to hold their position since they had started Head Start in Florida. And then I was the president for the state Head Start program. And I would go and do some training for the, you know, Head Start a lot of times. They're involved in what they're supposed to do, parents are supposed to do Head Start. So it was really nice.
What was a typical day like for you in the early 1960s?
1960.
Your daughter was probably in Head Start.
Yeah, well, my day would be at 4 o'clock, fixing breakfast, 4 a.m. in the morning, because my husband works. He goes to work at 4, and leaves us all by 1 or 2 o'clock. So I'd be fixing him some breakfast. Around 7, fixing breakfast, then getting ready for the side, to get ready for school. Then I would clean house, get ready to go to Head Start with Raymond. Come back at 12 o'clock, fix lunch. Then I would probably take a nap. I always took a nap between 1 and 2 every day. Me and my children would all take a nap. Then I would clean some more, get supper ready, and then start all over again, washing and
ironing. Endless battle.
Awesome. I
don't blame you.
I was in the kitchen all day mostly.
Okay.
We'd go to church. And that's when I began to do this. A little bit of travel, not too much.
Do you remember much about any of the minority leaders in the 60s, early 60s, say like Dr. Martin Luther King? Do you remember the first time you ever heard about him?
Mm-hmm. Let's see. The first time I heard of King, Dr. King, was, well, he was first in the JET, and that's when he began to come out speaking, making his different little comments on racial things, you know. So when I first heard about him, I read about him in the JET. The JET is a book that we did. It's a black magazine. We read them quite a bit in the black race. I just threw one away. Just do it in the garden. It comes out on a monthly basis.
Mm-hmm.
And this is where you'll hear a lot about our people,
mm-hmm,
and keep you informed all over the United States and plus Africa and different things like that. So that's when I first heard of it. Starting with the school integration, eating in the restaurants and things. So I read about him long before I heard him on television.
Would that be in the 60s or early 60s?
Mm-hmm.
What was your, how'd you feel about it? Can you remember? Sort of indifferent, just.
When I first read about it, I didn't feel no way whatsoever,
no,
really.
Any of your friends ever talk about it?
Oh yeah, we got so we began to talk about him. We thought he was a great leader. A lot of times we felt that he was talking a lot by alone, that he was setting himself up. You know, being born and raised in the
as I said, on this segregation situations and issues that we felt that he should have had more people, so that he wouldn't have been singled out as one. Although there's a lot of people that really was around him and with him, it always that they pinpointed him, that one individual. And we were always a little afraid.
Yeah, it wasn't his, you know, the media you didn't see him.
Right.
Do you remember anything about rioting in other cities across the U.S.? Seeing TV or radio?
Like Watts. Riding in Watts.
Watts? I don't know. Where is that?
Watts is.
What was that in New York? Where was Watts at?
Watts was. I think Watts was in New York where they began to burn and go on. The riding in Washington, D.C. Kept up with that quite a bit because I have an aunt who lives in Washington, D.C. The first time we went there, the street where she had lived, you know, we were able to just go shopping. It was just like a town all of its own. And soon after they began to burn and go on, we went back, and it was all gone, you know. And you just seen how one minute it was very businesslike and very, you know, lively, and then you go back and it was dead, nothing to buy. And we had some rides even here.
Yeah, a lot of people feel that seeing the riding in the other cities let people contribute to things that maybe happened for Farrell. Could you recall any racial tensions growing in Farrell between the blacks and whites? You think it was a growing thing from the early 60s, like blossoming effect?
I believe that the riot that they had in Farrell was mostly a few individuals. It wasn't the feeling of the whole community in the whole. It was mostly a few people who was started out with. They had a group here that they called the Black
Youth Action Committee.
Right. And I think they, caused a lot of that.
Would you call it a riot?
I wouldn't have called it more of a riot. I'd have called it more of a, I remember the night of the riot that we were in a sensitivity program of I'm okay and you okay at the Farrell Senior High School. And we were just about, we was going to finish up, that morning when the first riot broke out. I would call it more, instead of a riot, I'd have called it more of a...
Just a little bit of violence.
Yeah, breaking out windows and stuff, because they really didn't fight. Blacks didn't fight the whites, and the whites didn't fight the blacks. They mostly began to break out the windows here, right on Idaho Street and things like that. So I wouldn't call it more as a race riot, because we were all concerned about our neighbors, regardless of whether they're black or white and things. We do have some problems here. Even now, it's like buying a house where you want to cross a red line, and that's because of different people outside of the community. Jobs cause a whole lot of conflict here in this area, but I wouldn't always say that it's mostly what you call racial.
What was the sensitivity program you mentioned at the high school?
The school had got this program, which for one session they were able to put on a sensitivity program between, they would invite different people, like there was some people from the police station, some people from the community, some people for business, some people from the school system. And you just got together and you talked over the last for 3 days, and you talk over, in a very informal setting. We weren't allowed to leave, we had to stay there. And you just talk about how you feel about things, and different kind of feelings, can you touch and feel one another, stuff like that. And that's what we were going through when we had the ride, what they called the ride.
Mm-hmm. How was your life and your family's life? Was it affected any at all by the tensions? And do you feel there was any racial tensions in that field?
No, it didn't affect me at all. I still in my group, went to the kids, went on to school, went on with with their daily life, just like they had if it hadn't happened. First of all, I wasn't afraid of anybody white going to bother me, anything like that, so it never bothered me. I imagine it did bother some of the people. I just don't have that fear of that. I guess it guess we would be more friends of the Klansmen, that little things like this that happened that didn't really bother the aspect of me, you know, since I had been born.
Well, your house, you live pretty close to a lot of the window breaking and stuff.
The only thing I wanted to do was get home to see that my children were in the house and wasn't involved in something.
Has anybody in your family ever affected by any violence?
No.
Well, how do you feel the police and the governmental agencies handle some of the violence and tension?
I think it went fine. I didn't include some of the things. The policemen, I think, at the beginning, they made it worse than what it was, but mostly by their attitude and conduct. I know that time, the race ride, they were, you know, wanted to bring out the dogs, and they wanted to, they went and brought in other policemen and things like that, but there was a few of us who was in the neighborhood that were able to talk to them. And they went on home, but if they'd have kept on what they're doing, I think it would have really went into something a lot worse.
Because of their hate and
being mean and the way they talk to them and things like that.
How about the curfew laws then? Do you think they did anything? Did they add to it?
That stopped it from being off the streets.
A lot of people feel that requiring somebody 16, 17 years to be in the house by 9, 10 o'clock is a little absurd. And they want to go out to their girlfriends. They got to be home at a certain time.
Well, I think the curfew in a way is good in the sense that I feel that it keeps them from being off the street standing around. It's bad in the sense that when they can't go to activities and things and they're going to pick them up and stuff like that. I had a problem once with my son. Was picked up right in the same neighborhood he lived. He was going to my mother's because he was staying with my mother, but she was alone at the time. And he had went to an activity at the center, which was a dance. It wasn't over till 1 o'clock. 1:15, they picked him up. I had to pay a fine. And, of course, he went up to Upper Roma. Well, what it is, a lot of the kids go right up here and they buy potato chips and stuff, you know, and they come on out. Well, the bars would let him come in there. He was 18, so, you know, and they picked him up. I had to pay a fine for that. I thought that was very unjust. I went on and paid after I made a few, you know.
Yeah, they still have that in effect today.
But they have it in effect today, and I don't think that they should have bothered him more than he had went to the center. I think if he'd just been out there goofing off or something like that, 2 or 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock, things like that, then he should have been questioned where was he going. And they know him. That's another thing. It wasn't that he was unknown. And the police that picked him up know him, and they also knew me. Well, I just thought that they were starting something that they shouldn't have started because it was very unfair.
How about the founding fathers or the city government, the mayor and the council? I think they could have prevented it, maybe, prevented the violence, or maybe done a little bit more than what they did?
I don't think they would have been able to stop it because they weren't. But at the time, that would have been Mayor Petrillo. He was seen to be very fair. He wasn't racial because he was very close with blacks. But some of them, I think some of the issue, they weren't listening really at the day. Well, there's no activities, first of all, for the blacks. No reparations. If they had a racial problem at the time, they were having policemen who were going around beating up on the blacks, you know. And when they would go and file a complaint or something, they never did anything about it. And all of those things, I think, helped to contribute to some of the part of the racial that was part of it. Maybe it wasn't being more about one or two policemen that was causing all of that, you know. And I think if they would have done something to them a lot sooner, that things would have been better.
Most of the violence occurred in 69,
right.
Summer of 69. And I know there was no black representation in the fire department.
No.
There's no, they had, at the time, they had a common election, or what do they call it?
We just had a general election.
General election for council.
Group, right. Which, you know, they were voting on the whole area.
Yeah. And a lot of people didn't feel that was too fair.
No. still's not too fresh where it is now.
They have the same policy now?
Huh?
They have the same policy now?
No, we now gone to the home rule system of government. I think it would be more fair if you would allow to have one from each district, you know. That way you get a better reputation. Even now, we only have one black on there. So we still don't have a reputation as far as to the makeup of your community. And it was hard to even get him on there. So they don't, you know, it's not easy for blacks to get on different boards, even the school boards and things like that. But I can't fault that to be a racial thing. I think I contribute that to a lot of our black leaders who also vote against the individual who are running. We've ran different people like Dr. Lowe, a couple of preachers around here, but they were never able to get on there. And so that's contributed to not having the support of your own race. Because we have enough people in fur. It's almost now 50-50, maybe more than 50-50. So, you know, we should be able to get more people on the school board and different other boards.
You mentioned the Black Youth Action Committee. What do you remember about that group or organization?
They was basing themselves, I believe, after more like the Panthers. You know what they call them?
Black Panthers.
See, and so I think that we'd have been further ahead though here in Furl if they would have stuck together, because they had some good issues and things. You know, they had what they were fighting for was reparation for the kids, more of black cheerleaders and things in the school. You know, better jobs and things until they begin to fight among themselves, which contributed to the downfall. The people in the community didn't stop them, stopped themselves. But if they would have stayed together and kept their goals and objectives together, we would have been a lot better off now.
But the cultural center that helped the community, the action committee had received a small grant.
Right.
For a cultural center.
Yeah, and that didn't go as well as it should have, you know, which would have took care of a lot of the reparation program.
Mm-hmm.
But like I said, they began to fight. When money began to come in, then they began to fight among themselves, which a lot of times destroyed, you know,
yeah,
a lot of organizations.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Do you remember any kind of racial tensions in the PTA or anywhere? It's hard to kind of grab something.
A lot of times we have arguments with some of the people on the hill. We call them on the hill. It can be racial, I imagine. It's like when we want to build homes here, they still fight that. They don't want us to have any single dwelling homes, all right? They want to have like projects and things like that. And by us not having homes and things, we lose our youth who are able to find jobs, and they move to Hermitage, or they move to Brookfield, or they move, you know, to Youngstown, places like that, because there's no place for them to live. They build senior citizen homes and stuff, but nowhere for the youth. I think you can look at that a little bit as racial. When federal programs come, they'll come and tell you what's best for you, what they think should be best for you. We have argued about the condition of the homes and things, which we feel that I paid three times more for this home here than they paid when they bought their home, which is the white. And then when they get tired of something, they moved out, so then we have to take them and try to do what we can with them. And where some people are not able to fix them up the way they want to because we do not have the job and the money that, you know, they have. And even now, I think some of the same conditions still here. They haven't really changed because we find the blacks don't have the jobs and the meals. We have a few tokens, and I'll tell them they're tokens because we may have a few at the Sherner Steel and a few at the Weston House, or they may get into federal program jobs as directors and things. But I found that even when they get there, they more hard on us than white people are. So I don't know if you call that racial or what, you know,
yeah.
Because prejudice is prejudice regardless of who it is, and they are prejudiced because they figure they made it, so they're going to see how they can keep you down, keep from going anywhere. So we still don't have that many good paying jobs with the people here in Pearl. So when they do buy their homes, it's kind of hard for them, because most of you find in a black home, especially here in the community, you mostly find only that man is working, or the woman may be doing good small pediatric jobs, which doesn't bring their income up very high, and then, or even they're not working, period. We have a lot of people in this area that are on welfare, but the majority of them are not blacks, they're whites that are on welfare in this area. So,
would you say things are much better now than what they were in the 60s?
No, I don't think they'd be better. People shut up and became more quieter. Like I said, it wasn't a whole lot of racial thing anyway, but I believe the United States is going backwards on a whole lot of things. I think the South is more advanced, whether it's economically or racial, than the North. The North is now becoming the South. And the South is really going further ahead. I go home every other year, and I travel down to Texas. I've been to New Orleans, places. I think for white here are mostly hypocrites. And where they're in the South, if you find a white man that lied to you, he protected you and he helped you with your children and carried you all the way through. I was able to stay here, and my father had cancer. He worked for a family there in Pulaski, Virginia. And the only reason why I didn't have to quit my job and go there to take care of him was because of that white family who took care of him just like he was. Their family wasn't indifferent, taking him to Roanoke back and forth, seeing him because he had cancer, took care of him, looked after him, saw that he ate and everything like that. And that's more than even my own family did for him. So I don't look at things a lot of times as racial, because you have disagreement and discrimination, which is the black can be just as discriminated against another black as white people sometimes more so.
Why do you think the cause of the North can be so backward?
I think because the South, when they really found out that they had to, let blacks even attend school and things, that they went with it with an open heart, where here they kind of hide it. You go to school, but they really don't want you there, or they'll give you a job, but do they really want you there? And you can almost tell when a person wants you, because they're going to see that you're given a better job, better paying job, when there's chance for career development, they're going to send you and move you into those top positions and things like here. Where a lot of times right here in Pearl, before they would hire a person here, they go and bring someone in outside the community who don't know anything, even thing about a community or the people, which is really, necessary in order to do things for community. You got to have the feel of your community, and you have to know the community. By the time that individual know all of that, and someone here in the community teach them that, then they go on with the job. They could utilize that person right here from the community.
There's still housing discrimination today in Pearl?
Yes, it's hard for you to find a house here in Pearl still. First of all, there's not that many. Not in the projects. The projects is open up to you. But still, there's a problem in a way, because now they want to send the blacks to transfer or Grove City, kind of integrate you out into those areas. So it's hard for you to get a home right here in Pearl, where that's where you really want to stay, because of transportation problems and things like that. And then they tried to bring more whites in, they call that decentralization, whatever you want to call it. But it's still hard for us to find decent housing. The rent is very, very high. They pay from $125 to $160 for houses that's not really worth $50,
Well, what do you, going back a little bit here, what do you remember about the news coverage on all the violence and terror stuff?
News coverage? Oh, that's my son.
Hi, nice to meet
you. Well, they never did print things the way it was. They always printed the way they wanted to be. And so a lot of things that they print wasn't true. it wasn't the way that they, you know, they said it was. They still don't print things the way it should. Pearl seems to have a reputation for everything, you know, whether it's drugs or anything, but they don't say that Pearl is an area where we have all types of people coming here just for activities during the day, you know, or at night, one of the bars or something like that, and then they leave and go on back home. The Pearl's left with whatever went on in case they come, you know. We had what you call the guys on the motorcycle come here and they tore up and went on back to business, you know. You know.
So when they came here and had their good times. And
right, and then they leave you here with the reputation. Mm-hmm. We never did, and I think they contribute to a lot of things that, you know, made things worse. Too many only had the one newspaper, so they could say what they wanted to say, because who was it anything? There was not anything else to counteract what they said. So, mm-hmm. Burroughs newspaper, it went down so long ago, I don't even hardly remember it.
Mm-hmm. You think the newspaper could have helped fuel the fire?
Yes.
And it too hard. Right. How do you think that today, are you a little more objective for that?
Not really.
Same?
About the same. A little better. You can tell them one thing and it might go in there exactly as you say it. You know, it's going to rain tomorrow. They may say it rained tomorrow, but they might put in there, they said it was going to rain tomorrow and it snowed, or, you know, yeah. It's always different what you said, you know. But they are a little better.
How do you feel about Farrell's reputation? You think it's the same? Better a little bit?
I think we still have a little bad reputation.
Yeah.
It's hard to get away from that. Unless you have a lot of good things to counteract the bad things. And a lot of times they don't write about the good things anyway. They always don't write about the bad, so it's kind of hard to get anything good in the paper, right? So. I don't think we have as many problems here as far as stealing.
Well, was there any movements that you know of or organizations besides the sensitivity group that tried to better things with them and perhaps prevent
some of the churches got involved. The parents, they came together in different meetings and things to see what they could do to change, you know, what was going on. Also, how they could change the image of the newspaper and, you know, things they could do. We had what's called a concerned citizen group that came together, which now they have another concerned group, which now they call PUP. But we had a group that had started on the Home Rule Charter. Most of the blacks here didn't want the Home Rule Charter to become government body. And since then now, the whites have joined in and they don't feel that way, but then it was voted into law, you know, but we would deal with different issues and things like that under the call to concern. We couldn't get the other people on top of the hill to join in until they did start these other things about taxes and things. Now it's an integrated group. We work together pretty closely. Some of them do, I don't, but they work pretty closely.
You think they helped at all?
They have. Sometimes they have good points, sometimes they're not too cool, but.
Yeah. They're still in effect,
right? Right. Called PUF.
What does PUF stand for?
PUF, Pearl United. What is it? Pearl United Together for Better or something. I mean, I don't know exactly the terminology, but they call themselves PUF. And they started about dealing with raising of taxes and election, trying to get different blacks and whites to run, put them on the ballot. I worked with them a bit.
Well, looking back at the late 60s now, and everything that went on, what changes would you like to have seen instituted?
New homes. More black presentation in government. Right here in Fern. Better jobs, better paying jobs. We've done a lot of improvement as far as home, you know, bringing in things to redo our homes, things like that, which I thought was good.
economics for the big help.
Economically helped a lot, and then you wouldn't have to worry about having federal programs who told you how to do what you could do and things like that. I think that would help a lot, and you know, so we bought the federal programs, but since we didn't have anything else, that was better than nothing. Better recreation for the children. I think that would give them a lot to do.
On playgrounds.
Not so much playgrounds, because
clubs or
buildings where they could go. Like, we have a center down here closed in the summer, and the cost is so high that people can't afford to send their children. Or they can go to the Bureau of Insurance. You know, they're not discriminated against up there, but the cost is so high, who can afford to pay it?
Yeah.
So, but I think we need something like that. More activities and things for them, not just all the time playing basketball. I think they need some kind of educational things for them also, you know. I tell you another thing we don't have around here. We don't have anything kind of built incentive with the youth. Like it down south where I go, you know, things like that. They, within their different clubs and things, they kind of talk to the children and show them, take them to colleges and get them involved in attending college and things like that. They don't have that around here for kids. You know, if one decide to go, they go. And then where you have a lot of people going, you know, and things, you find that more people in the community go. You find everyone in the family most go, but maybe one. It don't seem here that one child will go to college and the rest don't. It's supposed to be different in the South. All will go, you know, if you have four of those children, all five of them will attend some type of higher education. We don't have that around here. Most of the thing they play up is basketball, being a basketball player, things like that, but they don't deal with, you know, what do you do if you're not able to play basketball or baseball or anything anymore? Where do you go without that education? I think we need more things like that.
Normal guidance.
Mm-hmm.
Well, is there anything else that you might think important to add to the public?
Well, of all the places I've been, I still like Farrell the best.
Yeah, that's good. It's good optimistic. One other question. It's been said by some people that all the violence that did go on, people bust in from other places. You know, like, it wasn't really people in Farrell, it was people from Youngstown who just decided to come over and cause some trouble. How do you feel about that?
Sure wasn't bust, because they never bought any buses around here. But I put the idea right here on the corner.
And I think
most of the ballot would be, well, we have a good relationship with outsiders, and they come in. You may have three or four, but it wouldn't have been that many involved in there. A lot of times things do go in for us, break-ins and things like that, that we don't know about. And they might not be involved in the church, but as far as race of violence,
was people from Farrell.
They would be from Farrell. Right here. And it wouldn't be that many that would cause it. Say about 10 of them would cause them all that. Instigate. Looking for power for themselves.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.